outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Tuesday, April the 15th, 2025, the year of our Lord, Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. You are listening to this Holy Week edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, as we like to say often on this program, don't wish people of evil will, people such as our enemies, good luck, folks, because if they're doing well, that means that we're doing very, very poorly. And by that, what I mean is as poorly gets. Go watch one of the Terminator films and you'll get a pretty good idea of what I'm talking about here. We are dealing with an enemy that has absolutely dedicated itself to our destruction. Something that we are supposed to especially recollect and remember with profound importance this week, folks, Holy Week, when Jesus Christ rode into Jerusalem and finished his three-year war against what was, at that time, the Jewish state, the deep state, whatever we want to call it. It was the same thing. Some of the names have changed, some of the particulars have changed, but the battle remains the same. We mentioned on a previous program, folks, that unfortunately this is one of the aspects of Holy Week and of the entire narrative involving Jesus Christ that has been forgotten. Instead, what we have been taught to believe is that everything that took place on Crucifixion Friday, that this was all done in order to absolve man of his sins, rather than putting it in the kind of proper and accurate context that I think now is obviously being revealed to the world, folks, is that Jesus wasn't just here to save us from our sins, he was here to save us from the Jews. The Jews, in this diabolical spiritual energy that drives them to think the way that they do, to behave the way that they do, obviously now, folks, 2,000 years later, almost 2,000 years later, these things are coming to light. And Jesus said this. He said that there is nothing hidden that shall not be revealed. And what he obviously meant at the time was many of these things, they would take time to unfold, that we would not necessarily understand them at the time that all of these things were taking place 2,000 years ago, but that we would understand later. And at this point, folks, you really have to be living with your head in the sand not to put these ideas together in a rational way. Jesus Christ came to save us from the Jews just as much as he came to save us from our own sinful natures. Anyway, folks, we have what I hope will be an important and interesting program lined up for you today. Yes, we are joined once again by our special guest, Stas, who we will be bringing up. I'll apologize ahead of time, folks, for some of the sound effects that you're going to be hearing. I feel like I'm coming down with a little something here, so if I happen to be sniffling or anything like that, just please bear with me. As is usual, folks, every year since we've been doing the website and the program, there will be nothing on Crucifixion Friday. We maintain here the old Catholic tradition of silence on that day. especially during the 3 hours on which Jesus Christ hung on his cross. So there will be nothing on the website that day. We will go dark, as the saying goes. And I would just encourage all of you out there listening to this program to think about and to ruminate what took place this day. You know, depending on what church you happen to attend these days, it's nothing but joyful noise and lots of theatrics and, quite frankly, folks, a lot of silliness, and people really have forgotten about what it was that Jesus had to go through that day and what he would go through today, folks, if he were to come back. Because have no doubt about this, that the people who put him through that 2,000 years ago would do it all over again, just as that slimy Jewish comedian Sarah Silverman said in one of her raunchy stand-up comedy numbers, that she hoped that the Jews did kill Christ and that if she had the chance, she'd do it again. And let's face it, folks, they are doing it again. It's just not taking place in Jerusalem. It's taking place in Gaza. Anyway, as I said, we will be joined here in just a moment by our good friend Stas. We're going to be talking about the tectonic things that have taken place over the course of the last 3 days, folks, 4 days. Ever since President Donald Trump sent his top envoy, Steve Witkoff, to the Middle Eastern nation of Oman to meet with the Iranians, the Iranian foreign minister, and they're talking about a peace deal. Now, folks, it's, how do we even put it? I've given up listening to any other alternative media outlets, folks, because literally it seems everywhere that you turn, you run into a wall of stupidity. It's a very disconcerting thing because every day you think that people are starting to be able to put the pieces of the puzzle together, and every day somebody somewhere with a rather large listening audience says something really stupid, such as that this is all just an act, that Donald Trump, all of his promises for ending the wars throughout the world, that this was just a hoax, folks, just like Sandy Hook was just a hoax, and that he is planning to start World War III. You know, when we always hear growing up, always be wary of those who think that they're right and that everybody else is wrong. And generally speaking, that is true, folks. You should avoid people like that because usually what it means is that they're nuts. But this is one of these times where, at least for yours truly, folks, this is more and more becoming the case. I don't understand how people are incapable of just taking the pieces of information that are right there at our disposal and putting them in their proper places and coming up with a good picture of what's going on, and particularly with regards to Iran. If you have been following the news ever since Saturday, folks, the Jews are in an absolute uproar. This uproar began when Netanyahu made his way to Washington, D.C. at Trump's demand, President Trump's demand, and at which point the president announced for the first time that the United States was carrying on direct diplomatic discussions with Iran to come to some type of agreement over Iran's nuclear program, not nuclear weapons program, but nuclear program. The Jews have been going absolute batty since that time. Every day there is a tidal wave of op-eds and other stories appearing in the Hebrew press, meaning those websites that are published in Israel, such as the Jerusalem Post, Times of Israel, Ynet, about what a horrible thing this is, that Donald Trump's making a huge mistake. And in one case, folks, an article that appeared today, written by the quote-unquote psychic and paranormalist Uri Geller, this is the The Jew who claims to be able to bend spoons with his telekinetic psychic powers, he has written a piece. it is entitled, let's see. It's so stupid, folks, that President Trump, nuclear talks with Iran will bring the world to Armageddon and to doomsday. Now listen to some of this, folks. I'm just going to read just a little bit of what this insane Jew has to say. Let's see. America's talks with Iran over its nuclear program are the worst thing possible. It is now clear to me that Donald Trump's surprise announcement last Saturday that the two sides would meet in Oman is what triggered my premonition of nuclear catastrophe just days earlier. I publicized it in the Daily Mail 3 days before the president shocked even my own Prime Minister Netanyahu with his unexpected overture to Iran. I did not realize it at the time, but it is now obvious to me that my paranormal antenna knew this was about to happen and that this is what compelled me to issue the stark warning. And now that the talks in Oman have started, the world has just taken a giant stride towards Armageddon. I will do anything to stop these talks. I will use all the supernatural powers I have to make them collapse. I will bombard the minds of Steve Witkoff and Abbas Araghchi, that's the foreign minister, Iranian foreign minister, so that they will walk away even if they do not know why. No, folks, this is not something appearing on the Babylon Bee or the Onion or any other tabloid that is dedicated to farce. It's the real deal. This is Yuri Geller, who is saying he's going to psychically, telekinetically, whatever, he's going to blow up the peace talks between the United States and Iran, because if the peace deal actually gets made, then that means it's the end of everything. So anyway, folks, it's important to remember that this piece that he just wrote, this appeared on what is arguably the most read news website in Israel, the Jerusalem Post. They run neck and neck usually with Ynet. Sometimes one's a little bit ahead of the other. But anyway, folks, this would not have made its way onto the Jerusalem Post unless there was a specific political reason for doing so. And that specific political reason isn't just to highlight the mental illness of this insane Jew, Yuri Geller. It's to convey a threat, folks, the threat of Armageddon. I'm sure that Yuri Geller, who has worked in intelligence circles by his own admission, he's worked with the CIA and he has worked with Israeli intelligence and other outfits, that he was approached probably by one of Netanyahu's people or even Netanyahu himself and was encouraged to do this. Yuri Geller is being used as the courier for passing along this threat of Armageddon, of doomsday, the end of the world, in order to blow up what the president is trying to do in trying to prevent the world from blowing up. Now, where is this more than likely going to have its big effect, folks? The president is not going to pay any attention to it, but I'll tell you who will. It's going to be the 100 million insane Christian Zionists in America, okay, who love Israel more than they love their own nation of the United States, and who love the Jewish people more than they do Jesus Christ. I'd be willing to bet my left earlobe, folks, that many of these churches with their tens of millions of followers have picked up on this op-ed that was written by this insane Yuri Geller, and they're using this now, just as Netanyahu intended, for them to begin putting pressure on the president not to go forward with this deal. That's how it works, folks. This is how it all is brought together. And on that note, before I bring up, no, I'm just going to go ahead and bring up our guest. Stas, are you there? Check in with us, please.
I am here. The ugly truth
Okay, what do you think
it's
about...
It's unfortunately uglier every show.
Every day, yeah. What do you think about think about this insane Jew, Yuri Geller, and his predictions of Armageddon if the president goes forward with trying to prevent Armageddon?
Any story, any author, any guy like Yuri Geller, the famous spoon bender, is used to get to war.
Yep.
In that article that you referenced, he's like, oh, you don't be a Neville Chamberlain.
Right.
And nobody questions this. Every enemy of Judea is our enemy. We got to do everything they want.
Absolutely.
Got to kill Putin. We got to kill Iran. We've got to kill ourselves. Have an abortion. Go to war.
Yep.
It's all horrible.
Yep. Yep.
Watch stupid TV shows till you're so stupid you can't even function.
Yep.
It's just on and on and on. And then if you complain about it, like even Gabbard, you know, good looking woman, formerly kind of liberal, beloved by the army. Oh, yeah. If you like her, you're a Russian agent.
Stas, it sounds to me, if I didn't know better,
ridiculous.
It sounds to me like you've had a bad week since we've gotten together. You've been carrying on conversations with people on a whole range of topics, and you've walked away from all of this, concluding to yourself how dangerously stupid the American people have become.
Yes, you cannot have a conversation, and I'm tired of being called stupid or whatever. As soon as you say you don't want war or whatever with Russia or whatever, you know, there's these trigger words, you know, Putin, everything. And of course, the hard part is our leaders have to lie too. I hate to use that word. Like, I'm not Trump, lying about his income tax or the constant. I've been bombarded with people saying so many accusations against the president of the United States that he's a rapist, he's a felon, and they don't really have the thing. But if you go to ask, they jump to a next thing. And I've gotten to the point where I tell people, I don't even care. Even if he did that stuff, we're talking about nuclear war.
Yep.
You know, we're talking about nuclear war. And they just want to get him anything, any way they can. A lot of it is just America's legion and armies of divorced women.
Yeah.
He's some kind of misogynist. They'd rather blow up the earth. They want to get this guy. Apparently, they've polled the Democrats. 50% of them say assassination if is necessary or is okay to get rid of him. And just recently, Gabbard, who seems mild to me, but apparently they find her evil now, too, that some guy from Georgia has made a threat on her, a legit one.
Hmm.
They want to kill her, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say to anybody, well, Gabbard, she wants peace, they'll call you a Russian agent. You know, call you a Russian agent, which is hilarious, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you do? She's a woman. She's good looking. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, I thought you guys wanted to promote female empowerment figures. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
She's a scumbag. So really, actually, you know, I've thought it over. You know, people are like, well, maybe if you know how people hit, they're like, well, just at least if Trump could be nicer and if he couldn't be mean on the Twitter. Apparently, it doesn't not matter because Tulsi Gabbard is well-spoken, female. It doesn't matter. So long as you go against Judea, you're a Russian or you're a some kind of
Islamo-fascist.
Correct. yeah if you don't go against everything you're saying, all of a sudden it's the end. I just saw a guy on that some ship also, this is the other weird problem, Patrick Hennessy or whatever his name is, he goes on all the shows and he's like, Witkoff is an idiot, Trump is an idiot, they don't know how to do diplomacy. And this is a weird case of you. I want peace with Iran. They are equal to us, but then they go on these shows and they're like, they're appealing to the. I don't mean to sound negative, but they're appealing to the Iran and Russia is awesome, but we're all stupid. You don't want to overdo that either. Mm-hmm. You don't want to put down America so much.
Right.
You know, you want to find a balance. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Yeah. I respect those cultures. I don't know if I'm making any sense. I'm not putting Iran and Russia down by any means.
No, you're making perfect sense. You're making perfect sense. And you're right. And this is the danger that we have discussed before, Stas. when activists and journalists and writers and truthers, when they don't apply strategy to what they're doing. You know, as we have said many times on this program, our objective in all of this is not to, quote unquote, bring the truth. Okay. Our objective is to win. And one of our strategies for bringing, for winning is bringing the truth. Okay. But just simply bringing the truth by itself without having a strategy for winning is a waste of time. I mean, look at, for example, like we've discussed many times, and we're not going to spend too much time on it this program because we've got a lot to cover. But just as you mentioned here, you know, the alternative media people and how, you know, everybody gets the same amount of information, but how they put the pieces of the puzzle together in a different way. Okay. All of these guys, I mean, like you mentioned, what's his name, which I find very interesting because I actually carried on some very extended face-to-face conversations with this gentleman, Patrick Henningsen, in Iran on my last trip. Seemed like a very reasonable person at the time. In fact, we were talking about Donald Trump because this was right after he had gotten elected the first time. He seemed very reasonable at the time, so I'm sorry to hear that he's actually gone down this road of characterizing the president's attempt at avoiding World War III with Iran as stupid. But again, Stas, this is, you know, what I talked about a few moments ago, where, you know, we really do find ourselves, I've used this analogy many times, it's like one of these zombie movies where the whole world's been decimated and, you know, the world is being, you know, it's turned into The Walking Dead. You've got these zombies just wandering around mindlessly and aimlessly, and you've got a handful of human survivors who have not yet succumbed to the sickness. And that really is, I think, a good comparison for where we find ourselves today. So we have to make sure we don't get bit. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And you have to be like Trump. You have to have a lot of friends who are Jews, but then flouted them, work with it, you know, use all kind of subterfuge.
Sure.
Or you can end up like a Rachel Corrie, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
The peace activists. I love those people too. I don't know. I don't mean to stereotype Patrick, but every time I see him on, he's like, Trump is an idiot. And you know, he's against war and this and that, but he's like, nothing can happen. But unfortunately, there has to be some power to resolve this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And this is what they get all the time. Some kind of real politic, you know. We would love if that would work, whatever. But they've taken to the streets. They had the boycott, BDS, whatever. They tried a lot of different things. You know, again, though, we've talked to a lot of times, it's going to be only complicated, almost bizarre, weird deal making is going to keep us from getting blown up.
Absolutely.
And, you know, unfortunately, I'd like to say that we could have a peace march and everything would end, but it doesn't work that way. It hasn't been effective, you know.
Yeah, and on that note,
case in point.
Go ahead, yeah, Stas. Oh, nope. Go ahead.
This is just a silly last point, but they were lionizing Greta Thunberg.
Right.
Girl, every day. Now, apparently, this person has defended the Palestinians, and she's disappeared off the earth.
Absolutely, yep.
And that's all they have to do, and they can't make Trump disappear because a lot of people who are view him as a King Cyrus or something in Israel like him. A lot of evangelicals like him. And they can't quite make them disappear.
For the moment. That day is coming. It's coming very quickly because this thing with Yuri Geller, I think, is going to be the opening shot of Netanyahu trying to turn Trump's base of support here in the country, the Christian evangelicals, against him, which we'll get into in just a moment.
Ah.
Yes, we'll get into that in just a moment. Before we do that, though, Stas, we're gonna take a trip down memory lane. I want to play something here. I ran into some really interesting information this past week, folks, finishing up this article that I'm writing. ran into this. I did a lot of research on Clinton, Lewinsky, Netanyahu's involvement in all of this. Obviously, not just for the historical interest in all of this, but rather as a template for what we are seeing now with regards to Netanyahu and his relationship with Donald Trump. I ran into a very interesting piece of news. I haven't been able to nail down the source of it because Haaretz and Ynet, because it was 30 years ago, I guess they have not archived the story. But I will just read here very quickly. Yes, the title of this piece is Netanyahu Threatens to Set Washington on Fire. This is written May the 19th, 1998. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu threatened to set Washington on fire if U.S. President Bill Clinton's administration tries to blame him for the deadlock in negotiations with the Palestinians, Israeli newspapers reported on Monday. Haaretz and Ynet both quoted what a Netanyahu aides as saying that the prime minister made the threat while meeting with Republican allies in Washington last week. Netanyahu reportedly said that he would unleash his Republican friends and members of the powerful U.S. Jewish community against President Clinton if the U.S. administration goes through with threats to blame Netanyahu publicly for refusing to compromise on proposals of reviving peace negotiations with the Palestinians. Now, folks, again, this is just a little stroll down memory lane in getting a better handle on where things are now today. I'm going to play a soundbite here, folks. This is the interview that President Bill Clinton, and by the way, folks, I hated Bill Clinton then and I hate him now, so don't see this as in any way our attempt at lionizing him or making him into a hero or anything like that. This is just the ugly truth of the history of the time, which is that President Clinton was trying to get a peace deal in the Middle East, and the Jews made him pay for it, specifically Benjamin Netanyahu. So as the story that I just read to you about Netanyahu threatening to set Washington on fire, the way that the timeline goes, folks, is that 2 days later, after Netanyahu made that threat, the Lewinsky scandal broke. And this is Bill Clinton, then president at the time, Bill Clinton, meeting with the NewsHour host Jim Lehrer to talk about this. Just listen to this for just a moment, folks. It is fascinating.
Mr. President, welcome.
Thank you, Jim.
The news of this day is that Kenneth Starr, the independent counsel, is investigating allegations that you suborned perjury by encouraging a 24-year-old woman, former White House intern, to lie under oath in a civil deposition about her having had an affair with you. Mr. President, is that true?
That is not true. That is not true. I did not ask anyone to tell anything other than the truth. There is no improper relationship, and I intend to cooperate with this inquiry. But that is not true.
No improper relationship. Define what you mean by that.
Well, I think you know what it means. It means that that there is not a sexual relationship, an improper sexual relationship, or any other a kind of improper relationship.
You had no sexual relationship with this young woman.
There is not a sexual relationship. That is accurate. We are doing our best to cooperate here, but we don't know much yet. That's all I can say now. What I'm trying to do is to contain my natural impulses and get back to work. I think it's important that we cooperate. I will cooperate, but I want to focus on the work at hand.
Just for the record, to make sure I understand what your answer means, so there's no ambiguity about it.
There is no.
All right. You had no conversations with this young woman, Monica Lewinsky, about her testimony, or possible testimony, before in giving a deposition?
I did not urge anyone to say anything that was untrue. I did not urge anyone to say anything that was untrue. That's my statement to you.
Did you talk to her about it? Excuse me.
Beyond that, I think it's very important that we let the investigation take its course. But I want you to know that that is my clear position. I didn't ask anyone to go in there and say something that's not true.
What about you're having to add. Did another one of the allegations is that that you may have asked, or the allegation that's been investigated is that you asked your friend Vernon Jordan
to do that.
To do that.
I absolutely did not do that. I can tell you, I did not do that. I did not do that. He is in no way involved in trying to get anybody to say anything that's not true at my request. I didn't do that. Now, I don't know what else to tell you. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. All I know is what I have read here. But I'm going to cooperate. I didn't ask anybody not to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. There is no improper relationship. The allegations I have read are not true. I do not know what the basis of them is, other than just what you know. We'll just have to wait and see. And I will be vigorous about it. But I have got to get back to the work of the country. I was up past midnight with Prime Minister Netanyahu last night. I've got Mr. Arafat coming in. We've got action all over the world and a State of the Union to do. I'll do my best to cooperate with this, just as I have through every other issue that's come up over the last several years. But I have got to get back to work.
Would you acknowledge, though, Mr. President, this is very serious business, this charge against you that's been made?
And I will cooperate in the inquiry of it.
Mm-hmm. What's going on? If it's not true, that means somebody made this up.
Look, you know as much about this as I do right now. We'll just have to look into it and cooperate, and we'll see. But meanwhile, I've got to go on with the work of the country. I got hired to help the rest of the American people.
Okay, folks, so that was President Bill Clinton, and I think this was the first interview with the U.S. media in the immediate aftermath of the Monica Lewinsky thing breaking. And, you know, with almost 30 years now, folks, of hindsight, we can read between the lines with exactly what the president at that time was saying, where he specifically mentioned, I've got to get back to work. I was up past midnight meeting or talking with Benjamin Netanyahu, and we've got Arafat coming in tomorrow. And right there, folks, that's what the whole Monica Lewinsky thing was about, was because Bill Clinton, President Clinton at the time, was squeezing Netanyahu and squeezing Israel into this, the creation of this Palestinian state. Now, folks, if they were willing to do it then, why wouldn't they be willing to do it now? Why would they not be willing to do it between the years of 2016 to 2020, when Donald Trump was in office and when he was pushing for a peace deal and he was pushing for the creation of a Palestinian state? I mean, the Clinton does not come out and say Netanyahu is doing this, but he comes close when he says, I have to contain my natural impulses. Everybody thinks that he's talking about down between his legs. But what he's actually saying, you should really look it up on the internet, folks, on YouTube, and watch the video itself and look at Clinton's face when he says that I have to contain my natural impulses. He's saying there that he knows Netanyahu did this and that he'd like to tell everybody that Netanyahu did this, but that he can't. He's got to play this game. And again, folks, I am not running to Bill Clinton's defense. I hated him then. I hate him now. I didn't think that it was possible back then for me to hate another human being as much as I hated him. We're just pointing out the realities of what takes place in the political world, where Israel is involved, where the Jews are involved, where peace and World War III and Armageddon are involved, and how these things take place, under the covers, no pun intended, and how it escapes. You know, I at the time, folks, that this was going on, I was cheering that Clinton had gotten his family jewels in a ringer and was being squeezed like this. I didn't realize at the time that this was an Israeli intelligence operation aimed at castrating, no pun intended, what the president was trying to do at the time in bringing peace to the Middle East and in creating a Palestinian state. Stas, you just heard Bill Clinton basically saying that Netanyahu is the one who set Washington on fire with this Monica Lewinsky scandal. How does this relate to everything that we're seeing now and everything that we saw during the first 4 years and actually the 4 years after of Donald Trump's first administration?
Well, they're in, as president, roughly the same situation in that they've got to make Middle East peace deals.
Yep.
And you know, Clinton ruined the office of presidency, domestically speaking, making it silly, playing the saxophone on TV and caught with Lewinsky or whatever.
Yep.
And just, you know, I didn't inhale the marijuana, but he made it bizarre. But nevertheless, even though he's not good for the country, he was still stuck in the same situation. He wanted to do a peace deal, and therefore they presented him with a girl in his office that you know he got involved with, and he got nailed. And they're trying to do that to Trump every which way they can. And so they're similar in that fashion. The where they separate is, I think, Trump's chaos methods and deal making is harder for them to deal with.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so let's just back up a little bit. We're not going to spend too much time on this, but this is an important thing that the listeners need to understand. Remember, folks, George H.W. Bush, he was going into that election season clearly head and shoulders above everybody. He had an approval rating after the end of the Gulf War of over 90%. Over 90%. No other president in history has had those numbers. And then, poof, out of the blue, magically, the economy suddenly starts doing poorly right at the same time that George H.W. Bush starts squeezing Israel for a Palestinian state. So, the bottom line is that the Jews ran him out of the White House and they put Clinton in. No doubt Clinton made all sorts of promises. No, I'll keep my nose out of the Middle East. I'm not going to cause any trouble for you. Yeah, just help me get in there and I'll make sure you have everything you want. And then when he got in, he started doing things his own way. And boom, the Monica Lewinsky thing blows up. The instructive thing here, folks, is that you can't lock yourselves into a position when it comes to this topsy-turvy thing of politics, and especially with regards to Israel and the Middle East. It is a fluid situation. Things change in an instant. The reason that we're going down this road having this discussion, folks, is because, again, as we said earlier in the program, depending on where you go for your information, you're going to run into somebody who's going to speak very authoritatively about how President Trump is out to start World War III and that all of these talks that he's having right now with the Iranians in order to avoid World War III is all just a hoax. Okay. And it's a sham, folks. You have to be careful about where you drink, what well from which you get your informational water, okay? This is how things fall apart in the country. This is how our enemies have gotten to the place that they are. They know how to play us like a violin. They know how to get us running around in circles, not making any sense. And then the next thing that you know, folks, we find ourselves as we did in 2020, with a stolen election and the Jews getting their guy and their gal into the White House in order to at least lay the groundwork for World War III. Now, we're going to jump into our discussion about the talks that took place in Oman over the weekend. Stas, are you ready for a soundbite? Is there something you wanted to add before we jump into that?
No, go right ahead. Excellent.
Okay, here we go, folks.
Turning overseas now to the nuclear talks between the U.S. and Iran. Negotiators from both sides meeting briefly on Saturday. ABC's Marcus Moore joins us with the details on what the White House is calling positive and constructive talks. Good morning, Marcus.
Janae, good morning. Both the U.S. and Iran have signaled that Saturday's talks were positive. The meeting took place in Oman and lasted about 2 hours. And it's significant because it marks the first direct contact between these two nations since President Trump returned to office. U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff led the discussion discussions, which were primarily focused on Iran's nuclear program. The UN says Iran has been accelerating its uranium enrichment, and U.S. officials believe Iran is working to develop a nuclear weapon. And President Trump has said Iran can never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon, and he has repeatedly threatened military action if a deal to curb Iran's nuclear program isn't reached. And it's important to note that in 2018, he withdrew the U.S. from the existing Iran nuclear deal. This one was brokered by the Obama administration, and Trump once called it the worst deal ever. And much of the discussion yesterday was done indirectly with each delegation in their own room and communications done through Omani mediators. But we understand that at the end, officials did meet briefly face to face. And so much is at stake surrounding these talks, not least the stability of the entire region. And will, the delegations plan to meet again next Saturday?
All right. High stakes indeed. Marcus Moore, thank you for that.
Okay. One more soundbite, folks, because we need to address something that a deliberate lie that was added into that news report that you just heard, where the newsreader said that U.S. officials believe that the Iranians are developing nuclear weapons. No, folks, this is not true. We know this isn't true because we have, from the most authoritative source of all, the fact that the U.S. intelligence community does not believe that the Iranians are developing nuclear weapons. And her name is Tulsi Gabbard, and we will be listening to that right now.
Director Gabbard, I understand you'll make a statement for the panel of witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity for us to be here to present you the intelligence community's 2025 annual threat assessment. I'm joined here this morning by my colleagues from the CIA, DIA, FBI, and NSA. Our testimony offers the collective assessment of the 18 U.S. intelligence elements making up the U.S. Intel community and draws on intelligence collection and information available to the IC from open source and private sector and the expertise of our analysts. This report evaluates what the IC assesses most threatens our people and our nation's ability to live in a peaceful, free, secure, and prosperous society. Iran continues to seek expansion of its influence in the Middle East, despite the degradation to its proxies and defenses during the Gaza conflict. Iran has developed and maintains ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and UAVs, including systems capable of striking U.S. targets and allies in the region. Tehran has shown a willingness to use these weapons, including during a 2020 attack on U.S. forces in Iraq and in attacks against Israel in April and October 2024. Iran's cyber operations and capabilities also present a serious threat to U.S. networks and data. The IC continues to assess that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, and Supreme Leader Khamenei has not authorized the nuclear weapons program that he suspended in 2003. The IC continues to monitor closely if Tehran decides to reauthorize its nuclear weapons program.
Okay, folks, so that right there was the voice of the United States government, specifically the voice of the U.S. intelligence community. Tulsi Gabbard is Director of National Intelligence, Director of the Office of National Intelligence, meets with the president every day. He knows what his own intelligence agencies have concluded with regards to Iran's nuclear program, not nuclear weapons program, but nuclear program. He knows that Iran is not developing nuclear weapons. So why is he saying that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon? Because he has to play that game. He has to play that game in order to maneuver politically the way that he has to. He can't have a rational conversation with the American people because, as we just discussed a few moments ago, unfortunately, the American people, especially when it comes to issues of foreign policy and especially the Middle East, are frighteningly and freakishly stupid. They simply don't know what is going on. So he has to do this. Now, if this is the basis upon which all of these alternative media voices are saying he's getting ready to start World War III, he's going to nuke Iran, if this is the basis, meaning Donald Trump, President Trump, saying that Iran cannot have nuclear weapons, then why did his director of national intelligence testify before the Senate? Why was she allowed to make that statement? Stas, your thoughts on this?
I think that the upper levels of the Trump administration green-lighted Gabbard to
absolutely
give the report.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And this is where the intelligence professionals, sometimes they have an easy job raking in millions, a brilliant mansion in McLean, Virginia, but this is where it's dangerous for them. If they say something that is either not likable to the president or the Israeli backed media in America, you can find yourself in a very tough spot.
Absolutely. So Stas, the bottom line is if Donald Trump, if President Trump were as much under the thumb of Benjamin Netanyahu and the Jewish lobby as we are told by certain quote-unquote experts out there within the alternative media, would Gabbard have been allowed to give this testimony to the Senate and to announce that Iran's not developing nuclear weapons?
No, they would have been told to shut up about it completely.
Yeah, sidestep it. Or
she never.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or lie, like that report.
Or lie, exactly.
Like that news report.
Yeah. Exactly. So if you're Benjamin Netanyahu, and you have just heard the director of national intelligence who has the president's ear on a daily basis testify officially that Iran is not developing nuclear weapons, and you're trying to get World War III started, you're trying to see Iran obliterated like Iraq was under the pretext of nuclear weapons, what's your next move going to be? Obviously, Stas, Netanyahu was not pleased with this. He can't come out and say, I was wrong, we were wrong, everything that we've been saying for 30 years about Iran's nuclear weapons program has been a big fat lie. So obviously, folks, the point we're trying to get across here is this. The president is not out to start World War III. He's not out to nuke Iran. He really does want to bring an end to these wars, not just because he's a nice guy, folks, but because he knows how serious it is. And it is, folks. Now, Stas, as you have said many times in conversations that you and I have had and on this program, the closer that we get to peace, the closer that we get to World War III. Now, with what just happened last weekend with Steve Witkoff going to Amman, meeting with the Iranian foreign minister, and them beginning the dialogue here to come to this agreement in order to prevent the same apocalyptic war that Netanyahu and the rest of these religious terrorists in Israel are planning. After all, folks, let's keep in mind the two words that Witkoff used and the Iranians used in describing these talks, positive and constructive. And just for the record, folks, Steve Witkoff, acting as the president's top negotiator, he didn't do what Netanyahu wanted done. Netanyahu was demanding when he was in Washington, D.C., he talked about the Libya model, which means to completely dismantle the entire nuclear program. And according to the news reports, and this is one of the things that has set the Jews off in the way that they are, is that Witkoff did not stipulate this with the Iranians. He said, you can keep your nuclear program. We just want to make sure that you don't enrich past about 4% so that it remains a peaceful program and that there's no development of nuclear weapons. Well, folks, this goes without saying anyway. The U.S. intelligence community has already concluded this fact, which means that there's something bigger going on here, and we alluded to this on the last program. This isn't just about avoiding World War III and avoiding Iran's destruction, folks. This is also about getting Israel's nuclear weapons out of their hands and into someplace safe. Because if the Iranians come to the table and they're willing to negotiate that they're not going to be armed with nuclear weapons, then I guarantee you, folks, and we will see it here, assuming that the world is not blown to bits within the next few weeks or the next few months, you will see the Iranians making the demand within these negotiations like this. You want us to not have nuclear weapons? We're willing to do that, but you're going to have to squeeze that terrorist state presently occupying Palestine, and you're going to have to get their nuclear weapons out as well. Stas, your thoughts about this?
Yes, it's always about the nuclear weapons. They are about stopping having them and making sure the state of Israel has them.
Yep.
That is the key to all the espionage stuff in this world, mostly. And this is awesome. And Witkoff, as you highlighted in blue on The Ugly Truth, he even sort of says, "Don't, you know, if this talks, don't worry. We're not gonna bomb you."
Yeah.
He's leaving the door open, like, calm down, you guys.
Yeah.
And that's why I get so mad that guys like Patrick Hennessy, they're like, "Oh, Witkoff and Trump are dumb or whatever." I don't care about that right now. And they want these experts who are these smug guys. Those are the stupid people that are educated in the Ivy League schools. They'll mm-hmm. get us into a war.
Yes.
I want some real estate guy to go over there. I do not want these quote unquote professionals
yep.
over there. I want just real guys who want to make real peace.
Yes.
Yeah. That know the situation. And they're doing roughly the same work. Real estate, complicated deals.
Sure.
You just switch it to peace deals.
Sure. Absolutely.
Please.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's not that, you know, and that's why some of these guys are quote unquote journalists. So they are sort of simpatico with these academic jerks
yes.
that, you know, just yep. are snobby. And they
you've
they
had
haven't
a, you've had a bad
world.
Week. You've had yeah. a bad week, haven't you, Stas? I'm sorry to have to drag that back in, but I
can
tell you've had a rough week with some of these people. You're at the end of your rope.
Allah does not mean the devil. I've had conversations like that recently. I mean, do I know anything about Islam? I know zero, but I know they're talking that just translates to God, and it's not a bad thing. Please. Sometimes you got to keep it simple. You know, that's not a bad word.
It's not. I can tell you this, having grown up in a family, at least half of which came from the Middle East, that when we would go to Mass at the Maronite Rite, and it was the Catholic Mass, in Arabic, that you heard the word Allah all the time because it just means God. That's what it means. Okay, so Stas, now it's time for us to put on our psychic cap and get into what Uri Geller is talking about when he talks about Armageddon breaking out if Trump makes this deal. As you have said many times, the closer that we get to peace, the closer we get to war. So, what are the Jews likely to do if these peace talks between the United States and Iran actually begin bearing fruit? Now, folks, before Stas gives his answer, I want to bring something else into the discussion here. The Jews have been preemptively celebrating the destruction of Iran for 2,500 years. Okay. It's a very sick thing. It's hard for us as Gentiles to wrap our rational minds around it, folks. But, you know, we're dealing with a group of people here who they follow a religion, if you want to call it that, that celebrates death. Celebrates the death, especially of Gentiles, the destruction of Gentile civilization, everything that the Gentiles have ever brought to the world. And their yearly celebration of Purim, where they are religiously commanded to get falling down drunk and then to eat pastries that have been made to resemble the body parts of their Persian enemies, you know, eyes and ears and, you know, internal organs and things like that. This celebration is not about the past, folks, where they are supposedly celebrating the fact that their genocidal ancestors mass murdered 75 million Persians. It's about the future as well, for reasons that I don't yet understand why the Jewish brain has decided that the Iranians have to be offered up as a burnt offering to their violent God Yahweh. But that is what this whole Purim thing is about. It's not just about the past. It's about the future as well. And Benjamin Netanyahu has hung Israel's future on this event, that Persia has to be destroyed. So, obviously, when they have been, as I wrote on one of the EdNote commentaries this morning, folks, it's down to the wire. It is down to the wire, because now we have very powerful alliances being formed that the Jews can't control. Okay, the Russians and the Iranians are moving closer together. The Iranians and the Chinese are moving closer together. The Chinese and the Russians are moving closer together. And these people, folks, these nations, they have nuclear weapons, the Russians and the Chinese. Not only that, they have political power and economic power that, you know, if enough countries join in on this, then the United States and Israel are going to find themselves alone against forces that they cannot match or overcome. So, Stas, what's likely to take place given what we know about Benjamin Netanyahu and his threats 30 years ago to set Washington on fire over Bill Clinton's issue of creating a Palestinian state? If Donald Trump is going to screw up Benjamin Netanyahu's plans for World War III, centered in Iran, what are we? Let's get a few ideas out there of what we are likely to see happen sometime in the near future.
If they think that Trump has gotten over on them, then we could be looking at a continuation of the story they started early in Trump's presidency. The Iranians have a mother drone ship.
Yes.
They could blow up the Capitol building.
Yes.
They could sink a ship.
Yep.
They could
cyber attacks. Cyber attacks.
A cyber attack. Yep.
Yeah.
Multiple killings of American diplomats.
Yep. Members of Congress.
They have
members of Congress.
They could even probably do a team that resembles Iranians and kidnap a ton of people. They could capture an American
base. They already have that, Stas. It's called the Mujahideen cult, the MEK. They were on the terrorist list up until a couple of years ago, and they are terrorists. They work for Israel. They're Iranians. They are the Iranian equivalent, I guess, of the Mistarvim that operate in Arab countries.
Yes. I think Mark Dankoff's father had a scrape with them.
Yeah, he almost lost his life to them. Yep.
Crazy. And that is a very good for the other side, because the closer you get to the truth, the better.
Yep.
You know, in other words, if they can resemble them, so dangerous. Yes. Yeah, so they've got so many weapons with to use. If I could do just a side detour wicked quick.
Sure.
We got the pitchfork here of disaster. So you got the a potential war on Iran. And the other thing been studying lately, you know, we all were hoping that Trump could, you know, everybody's like, do what he's accused of. Oh, yes, he's Putin's buddy. So what is the problem with the Ukraine war? Well, there's been some interesting revelations lately. Mm-hmm. Why it isn't ending up or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is because, and the Russians may be even holding up, finishing it off. If they do finish off Ukraine, then the American neocons and neoliberals and all the rest are going to say, well, we had Russia on the ropes and Trump blew it.
Uh-huh.
He's got to go. This is yet another problem for Trump. In other words, if Russia wins too well over there, it puts Trump in a situation.
Uh-huh.
A difficult situation, because they'll put everything they got in the media saying, well, you know, he's left the Ukrainian people to die, which is the other way around. The Ukrainians are all dead now because the CIA, Mossad, MI6, whatever, has armed them to the teeth, and they really couldn't win. The Russians too strong. We all knew it. Basically, you know, whatever screw up they have is temporary, and they've been, you know, doing all kinds of crazy things to keep it going. Actually going into Kursk, mm-hmm. which was insane. Mm-hmm. And under Biden, you know, this is what the Biden supporters just can't realize. They were doing long-range weapons into Russia. It could have been all over for us.
Uh-huh.
So this is a weird situation. And I don't know how Trump can get out of it. He that's why he's saying I'm pissed off at Putin, whatever. I think it's similar to his tough talk in Iran. It's all phony, but he cannot look like he aided Putin in some
Absolutely.
Kind of victory.
Yes.
Or he's nailed. It's a horrible, yet another horrible situation.
Yep.
So they've got two options, two avenues to take him down, the Ukraine route or the, or even back to Gaza anytime, you know, they could do something over there too. Oh my God, because you had a back channel and you talked to Hamas, Israel, the Holy Land is in danger and something could happen. They could, mm-hmm. they could easily, I don't even think they have any qualms about blowing up some of their own guys too. You
yep. know,
that's always another weird thing.
Sure,
you know,
absolutely. October 7th is proof of that. Netanyahu and the rest of his gang of Torah terrorists there making up the government, they knew it was coming, and they had their agents embedded within Hamas to carry out, you know, all of these things that we have heard about, you know, the rapes, the beheadings, things like that, in order to create this narrative needed. And it is firmly embedded within the American mind, within the consciousness of the world. Even, you know, the best efforts of these people to go and debunk this stuff. Again, strategically, it was a stupid move to make, to try and undo. It's like trying to convince people that the Holocaust never happened. Okay, we know that the numbers are not true, that the particulars of it are not true, but to try and go and convince people today that the pictures they've seen of World War II and the camps and all the rest of that, that this is all just a hoax and it never happened, it's a waste of time. Okay, and Mike Piper always used to say that. He said, look, the Holocaust, debating the Holocaust bores me. He said, you know, the question that we should be asking is, why did the Germans hate the Jews so much that supposedly they were willing to do these things? But anyway, you're absolutely right. There are a million different things that Netanyahu and his people can do in order to get us closer to World War III and Armageddon. And again, folks, we have to remember something here. And again, this is the problem with not putting the pieces of the puzzle together in the right way. Okay, everybody thinks that our problems right now in the world, and especially in the Middle East, are all the result of the quote-unquote new Jew that arrived there. These Khazar Jews who follow their Talmud rather than the real Jews, the true Jews who follow the Old Testament and the Torah. Okay, that's not true, folks. It's simply not true. And this week, especially this week for Christians, should underscore the stupidity of that argument all the more, because as we have said often throughout the years, when Jesus was going through this political hit that resulted in him being executed on Crucifixion Friday, there were no Khazar Jews in existence and there was no Talmud. Okay, this is not all the result of the quote-unquote new Jew, folks. The plan to set the world on fire, it's thousands of years old. It didn't just begin a century ago with Theodor Herzl or with Jabotinsky or any of these other people. It's thousands of years old. They have been planning this for thousands of years. Okay. And so with regards to Donald Trump and his attempts to pull the lit fuse out of this thing, they have, as Stas just said a moment ago, folks, they have 1,000 different arrows that they can shoot at him. And why it is of vital importance for us out here in the alternative media, whatever we want to call it, that we don't add to that pressure. Stas, your thoughts?
Exactly. They're very frustrating. I think that I am now more and more not in line with anybody. And with anybody.
The Lone Ranger.
Which sounds bizarre.
The Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger. It's weird. I don't know if it's please nobody think it's egotistical or whatever. I'm just looking at it and going, look, I would prefer that our fate doesn't rest on the guy that used to have a TV game show. Right. That's fine. But the American people are so crazy, such little attention span.
Yeah.
That this is the kind of guy that had that Absolutely. He has to entertain them.
Absolutely.
He has to entertain them.
Yes.
And he has to keep up with the music and the porno and the rotten movies and the sports, just to get a thing out. And he's trying, and he like leaves these little things out, and you have to listen carefully.
Yep.
And now you got to listen carefully to Witkoff and Gabbard and all them too. They put a little line in, you know. I think the reason why we haven't been in war under Biden and the other administrations and even now is people, yep. Colonel and below are, I do think that, and this is pretty shocking. Sometimes they yell at these Israeli Jewish first
sure.
politicians, go, yep. look, we cannot do it, man.
Yep.
You go in, you know, and people don't see this.
Yep.
These are people that don't care because they would have to go in and you know, they're telling people, hey, we got 800, 1,000 bases. You know, you can't, you know, do it. And they think they can, and they have a plan to do it. That's why Syria fell fast. And so, you know, it could happen to any of these countries like we've talked to before. But ironically and weirdly, you know, Trump doesn't want to overextend, and this is what it's all about. Any too far pushing, and it could be over.
Yep.
It's like we know about the BRICS; they're warning us too. So I think that's part of why he attacked China with these tariffs.
Yes,
I think it's part of Trump's thing. He's going to be like, "Look, we're going to be talking." It's a weird way he does it. They're very angry at him. Now he'll go in the back room and go, "Look, you know these tariffs aren't the main problem. The main problem is." There's a group of people who have the nuclear weapons, who have high technology, and Mr. Xi Jinping, Mr. Putin, Supreme Leader Iran, we know that honestly they want us all out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a Mexican standoff that we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
That recent revolution, we were all dying to see that war would be over. All these smug intellectuals, oh, Ukraine is winning and all that, all these lies, all the death. But unfortunately, if that just ends like that, they'll find some way, maybe
sure.
even articles of impeachment. You, sir, failed Ukraine.
Absolutely.
You're a war criminal or something.
Yes.
When it's the other way, they're the war criminals.
Yep. Yeah,
insane.
And this is important, Stas. We have to reiterate this to the listeners. Everybody thinks that just because the House and the Senate are, you know, held by the Republicans, that this gives the president a blank check to do what he wants. No. He has a very, very small majority, folks, just literally about half a dozen from each chamber, about six from the House and about six from the Senate. And the bulk of the Republicans, folks, they're limp-wristed, wet noodle types. They're not MAGA people, okay? And so just as easily as Netanyahu was able to during the time of Clinton, he was able to create this huge storm, this huge tsunami of scandal over Monica Lewinsky. And as he did with Donald Trump, they can do it again, folks, because I guarantee you that these members of Congress who are nominally in support of Trump, if they get a visit from Mossad, or if they get a visit from AIPAC, and there's a folder that is pulled out of a briefcase with pictures of such and such congressman engaged in some, immoral or even illegal act, sexual act or something like that, they're going to cave. They are going to cave, even if it means that they have to turn against the president and not be reelected for doing it, because the alternative is 100 times worse. Stas, we are just about at the end of today's program. I can feel whatever this plague that is coming on me, it's starting to come down on me heavy, and I'm going to have to sign off. Before we do, though, let the folks know what they need to know in case World War III breaks out and we don't get back here on the radio again.
I just say any of you guys listen, just keep praying. Try to calmly tell people the truth, but be prepared that they cannot handle the ugly truth. They can definitely not handle the ugly truth. I have never seen anything like this. You know, I've said to people, come on, you've got kids. What do you want them to get drafted? Do you want to get blown up? There's no fear here.
Yep.
It's too many years of watching as entertainment, the shock and awe thing on TV. They think it's a cakewalk.
Yep.
I think ironically, it probably one of the things holding the line is these people like Gabby and her friends. They know what's at stake. Their friends got to go.
Yep.
You fat people are going to be watching it on TV.
Yep. Yep. Good point. Actually, very profound, Stas. It's you underscored some things there that I hadn't thought of. Is that the American people, they have been mentally bred for war because they've been watching it on TV and on movies and on video games for years, and it's never come home. And so now we have been conditioned to think that it can't happen here. And that's exactly the kind of mindset that the Jews need if they're going to get World War III started. Stas, I want to thank you personally and thank you on behalf of the listeners once again. It was a fantastic discussion. You are an invaluable contributor to this discussion. Just hold on there for a second. I'm going to close out, but I want to talk to you off the air.
Sure.
Okay, folks, so that was, once again, Stas. And thank you to the listeners who have been sending in emails, very appreciative of what we're trying to do here, folks. It is a lonely job. It really is a lonely job. I wish these conversations were taking place in other locales, but they just don't seem to be. And I hope they are, folks. I hope they are. I can't claim that they're not because, quite frankly, I don't pay attention to anything that anybody else says anymore. It's just too depressing and it's too discouraging. But anyway, folks, it is Holy Week. It is the week where we remember the brave heart, the William Wallace of first century Palestine, Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. You know, I did have somebody ask me, why do I call him King of the Gentiles? Well, folks, because when Pilate was forced into giving in to the Jews' demands to have Jesus crucified, he had the placard nailed to the top of the cross that said, Jesus Christ, King of the Jews. And the Jews went absolutely out of their minds over that because they said, we have no king but Caesar. And obviously, folks, Jesus wasn't their king then. He's not their king now. But he is our king. He is our king. And just one more quick note on that particular issue. The next time you get into a debate, folks, with one of these Zionist types, and they're talking about the fact that they had their country taken from them, and it was taken over by the Gentiles, it was taken over by the Romans, folks, it was taken over by Caesar, remind them what their ancestors said when Pilate presented Jesus to them as their king, and they said, we have no king but Caesar. So the fact that they have been ruled by the Caesars now, meaning the West, the Christian West, for 2,000 years, this was by their own doing, folks. They said, we have no king but Caesar. Then, fine, you will have Caesar as your king. That's it for today, folks. We wish all of you a blessed and safe Resurrection Day weekend. Yes, folks. It's called Resurrection Day. It's not called Easter. It's called Resurrection Day. And the sooner that we start changing our language in that regard, not Good Friday, but Crucifixion Friday, and not Easter Sunday, but Resurrection Sunday, the sooner that we start changing our language about these things, the sooner we'll start changing our mindset about these things, and the sooner that we will see things change all over the world. That's it for today, folks. Until we meet again, pray for a miracle, folks, because we sure as hell need it.